Thank you, Domitee. Good morning. It's John Williams. I'm in the Allstate Skyline Studios, downtown Chicago, just down the hall from Lou Manfredini. Griffin Filipich is our producer. The famous Joe Brand is doing sports for us today. I know there's nothing more interesting than hearing somebody say something you already know about the weather. But it's 40 degrees cooler right now than it was 2 days ago. We set a record on the last day of summer or the first day of fall this year. It was 92 degrees. You said 52, Domitee?
It's 52 right now at O'Hare.
I opened the door this morning just to see what the planet was like and went, oh, crap. And I know some people went, it's here! Hooray! Thank you, God! The fall has arrived! I was not one of them. I swam in Lake Michigan yesterday all by myself. No one else was in the beach. I went over there, and actually, weirdly, the water was surprisingly pleasant. But all of the lifeguard stands had been pulled down. They didn't even have the red flag up that said, don't go swimming here. I'm not exactly sure what the rule on that is. Is it okay or not okay? But there I was, and then I got up this morning and went, wow, it's 40 degrees cooler, and you feel every bit of it, and I'm happy for you. It does feel like football weather, I'll say that. But we're still playing baseball. And yesterday, on the south side, a guaranteed rate, it was hot. It was really warm in that stadium, especially for us wearing the dark White Sox colors. I want to talk to you a little bit about the job that you have that is not your main job. Domitee just mentioned this. He said that the governor is talking about whether or not your salary history is something that should be made available to a prospective employer, and it just reminded me of an article that was in Time magazine recently. And it was about teachers. And we think about teachers sometimes having second jobs because, A, they don't get paid as much as people in the private sector, and, B, because they have 3 months off. So teachers sometimes have second jobs. But I know a lot of people that have full-time 40-hour-a-week jobs, and they have a second job. As good as the economy is, and as good as the 401ks are doing and the stock market is doing, most people don't have 401ks. And there's a lot of jobs out there, but how many of them pay that well? I know so many people who have full-time jobs, and you go, great. And then they schedule time for their other job. And I'm asking you what your second job is. Tell me what your first is. Hey, John, I'm a fireman, I'm a teacher, I'm an accountant. But then on weekends or on nights or whenever, I do X. And Time magazine was listing all of the things that just randomly they asked teachers across the country. So here's Tracy Deegan, 53, Cape Cod, Massachusetts. She makes $80,000 as an elementary school teacher and as an oyster farmer earns $15 an hour. Chris Williams, 36, Houston, Texas, high school history teacher, makes $56,000 a year. And then you'll find him at the Barnes and Noble making $11.75 an hour. Jeanne Dorsey, 52, middle school social studies teacher, earns $49,000 a year and then is the escort at the Tulsa Roughnecks Games, where she takes people to their seats, tears their tickets. She makes $8.75.
Oh, that kind of escort. Okay.
What were you thinking?
Oh, nothing. Sorry.
That's more of an usher, I would say.
Can we use some different terminology?
It says here, escort. She's an escort. Shame on you, Domitee. Matthew Williams, 31, Tulsa, Oklahoma. High school history teacher, makes $35,000 a year. I'll pause while you comment to the people around you on that fact, and is also an Uber driver making $100 to $400 a week. A lot of Uber drivers ain't making $400 a week. Courtney Haney, Houston, Texas, middle school science teacher, $58,000 a year, dance instructor and choreographer at Living Lines Dance Studio, earns $38 an hour. I'll bet $38 an hour is more than Courtney's making as a middle school teacher. I'll give you one more. Megan McMillan, 38, Houston, Texas, high school freshman leadership teacher, makes $51,000 a year and is a dog trainer at PetSmart for 9 1/4. So I'm just wondering, what's your main job And then, B, tell me what that second job is. My number is 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And it's not just teachers. In Minnesota, my producer, Monday through Friday at WCCO Radio, drove a school bus in the morning. She was driving the kids around from 6 to 9 and then got to work around 10:30 and then worked with us till around till 7. We were on the air till 7. And then she got home around 8. And she did that every single day of the school year. And you could say, well, and it's true. I don't know what she was making. Say she was making $70,000 a year, and then she makes another 20 on the side. I'm just making those numbers up, and that helps pay for her daughter's college education. You know that, so that's okay. But I think some people are doing it because they. It's not just a college education. It's groceries. It's. You know, medical bills, it's the mortgage, it's stuff like that.
Well, and you would hope that in America, college education is comparable to those things.
Right.
In that it's a necessity and that it should be covered by, you know, people make.
Absolutely, Griff.
In a 40-hour work week.
I get you. Right. You ought to be able to, if you have a full-time job, you ought to be able to afford some sort of college for 4 years for your kids. But you can't. Listen, when I get to be king, here's why you want me to be king someday. And I know you don't need me to give you another reason, but here's why I should be king someday. College will be free. I mean, at least through 2 years of junior college. And if you want to go to the University of Illinois or Northern or Southern, it would be free when I get to be king. Now you're saying, John, how are we going to pay that? I don't know. By the way, Domity, I'm following, as are you, this 1:30 deadline. Christine Blasey Ford is supposed to tell Chuck Grassley in the Senate if she's going to testify and under what terms in the Brett Kavanaugh hearing. Have we heard if, in fact, they've come to 1:30 is the deadline, right?
Yeah, 1:30, 2:30 Eastern. And right now they're looking at possibly Wednesday having that committee hearing. And they're trying to figure out what the terms are. They're talking to her attorneys, but it looks like GOP leaders are growing a bit agitated. They don't want to give the message that they don't want to allow her to be heard, but they also don't want to delay this thing any further.
Okay. You know, that's what I'm reading, too. I thought it was Monday that Kavanaugh was going to testify, that maybe she would, too. But now I'm just reading from the New York Times. Throughout the day on Friday, Dr. Blasey's lawyers and Senate Judiciary Committee aides tried to work out the details, like how many photographers will be in the room, will it be on TV, how many TV cameras in the room. Blasey, fearful of being mobbed by the news media, wanted one photographer and one TV camera. Who would ask the questions? Republicans want an outside lawyer. You don't want to be the grumpy old man asking questions to her in this case.
I was going to say, and not only that, they don't have any women on that committee.
Well, that's it. So one of the ideas was floated that they would then get their female staffers to ask questions. And another one was that an aide from Grassley's office or one of the senator's office would go to her and they could do it more privately. But none of them want to be that guy, and none of them want to be that guy televised. And yet they are playing hardball, too. Dr. Blasey favored the senators. She wants them to ask the questions. And what day the session would take place? She wants Thursday. Republicans wanted Wednesday. For 24 hours, they can't seem to come to terms. One other thing I just wanted to say about this. I don't think this is the sort of thing that should be negotiated or communicated via Twitter. And yet that's what's happening. It's just so weird. For instance, here's a tweet from, this is Senator Chuck Grassley. He's the Republican from Iowa. He's the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. He's the guy that they're trying to figure this thing out with. So he tweets, Judge Kavanaugh and I just granted another extension to Dr. Ford to decide if she wants to proceed, W, the statement she made last week to testify to the Senate. She should, S-H-L-D, decide so we can move on. I want to hear her. I hope you, spelled letter U, understand. It's not my normal approach to be indecisive. Okay, so he's compressing this statement to her, her attorneys, and the world so that he can get it into 280 characters. A telephone call would have killed him. I mean, this is literally how they're communicating back and forth.
He's always tweeted like that, and it's been kind of a meme over the past 5 years or so.
Grassley.
But what he was tweeting about never mattered as much, or at least to a certain subsect of Twitter, as it does now. So it's always been kind of funny, and now it's just seems dissonant and strange and kind of, yeah, not right. It's just like, is this how we're doing this?
It totally doesn't seem to match the gravity of the situation. I know the Pope needs Twitter, but really I don't think so. I know the president needs Twitter. I'm not speaking about this president, but when Barack Obama would do it, I'm like, I don't think, if you want to say, you know, we're going to have a ceremony on the White House lawn, fine, but I don't even like condolences via Twitter. You know, I know you've got to talk to the nation, but if you step out on the lawn, the cameras will be there, Jack. That's assuming that your name is Jack. I'm just saying that I think that the Twitter is used by all of us and can be used as a shorthand. But if what you're saying has a certain measure of gravity, like we need to decide if that man sexually assaulted that woman and you're negotiating the terms, if the communication you're having has to be shortened to SHLD for the word should, then don't do it on Twitter. I know they have cell phones.
I think you're right, but this is not necessarily the most important point to get stuck on. I think getting stuck on this.
Oh, this is a sticking point for me.
No, I would let it go.
Always been a sticking point for me.
I would absolutely let it go.
Uh-huh.
The theater, though, is what's so irritating about all of this. Like, it's the same thing that President Trump understood about this whole thing. I will make a decision on this day at this time. Tune in next week to American Politics. That's the thing that makes it weird to me.
He tweeted, the president did twice this week, and I'll bet you he didn't run him by Melania before he did. He said, Judge Brett Kavanaugh is a fine man with an impeccable reputation who is under assault by the radical left-wing politicians who don't want to know the answers. They just want to destroy and delay. Facts don't matter. I go through this with them every single day in D.C. He wrote, I have no doubt that if the attack on Dr. Ford was as bad as she says, charges would have been immediately filed with local law enforcement authorities by either her or her loving parents. I ask that she bring those filings forward so we can learn the date, the time, and place! Exclamation point. I mean, that begat its own hashtag, which is why I didn't come forward. And thousands of people are now saying, Mr. President, just so you know, there's a lot of reasons that women don't come forward with allegations or charges when, in fact, something has happened. And if you asked your wife, she might tell you why. But that's just the way we communicate these days. And maybe I shouldn't be hung up on that, but I think I can be and still appreciate the gravity of the situation. So 1:30 today, we are supposed to know if, in fact, they have come to terms on this. And then we'll see what happens maybe on Wednesday or Thursday. The other story which has really gripped Chicago this week is, of course, the Jason Van Dyke trial. Stacey St. Clair has been writing about it from the courtroom. Our Eric Unger, now I'm spacing the name. One of our reporters. Eric Rung has been covering it, and we've been talking to him, too. Stacey's going to swing by our studio after 10:30 to just summarize for us the prosecution's case. The defense will now begin their presentation on Monday. So Stacey will take us through the first half and just answer some basic questions about what's happened. The $64 question, of course, is will they put Van Dyke on the stand? They don't have to. Is the defense feeling good enough about where they are right now that they can actually let him not testify and feel that the state didn't make their case? Or do you put him on the stand? And if you do, under cross-examination, that could go badly. So what do you do? We'll find out at least on Monday or so. Stacy says hi to us in a few. Thank you, Doma T. John Williams in the Allstate Skyline Studio. In the next half hour, the Mincing Rascals talk about what the tax rate should be in Illinois. Oh my God, did they go at it. The best podcast in the city of Chicago. The Lissagore Award winner. This is the journalism organization in Chicago, and each year they award some trophies. They said, what's the best podcast? And it was judged to be the Mincing Rascals. It includes Eric Zorn from the Tribune, the columnist there, often Kristen McQuirley, one of their editorial writers, and usually Scott Stantis, the editorial cartoonist, and then a batch of us from WGN Radio. Always me and Steve Bertrand, and frequently Justin Kaufman and Patty Vasquez join us. So I appreciate all of their efforts, and it's a really good podcast. It's free, of course. Wherever you listen to podcasts, make The Mincing Rascals part of your weekly download. Stacey St. Clair writes for the Chicago Tribune. She's in our studio now. Hi, Stacey. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, a long time no see. How have you been?
I've been busy, but yeah, I've been good.
We've been reading your coverage in the Chicago Tribune of the Jason Van Dyke trial. Mm-hmm. So after jury selection in what I thought was fairly short order,
yeah,
the prosecution made its case. What were the takeaways for you on this?
Well, that also was in very short order, right? 24 witnesses in 4 days, and then they rested. My main takeaway is that this case proves how hard it is to prosecute a case when you don't have the support of the police officers who are the eyewitnesses to the alleged crime.
That's interesting because the prosecution, in fact, did call some of the officers to testify on their behalf.
Yeah.
Some of them granted immunity for that. How did that go for them?
Yeah, two of them were granted immunity. I think they worked better than some officers testified better for the prosecution than others. The biggest ones were Officer Joseph McGilligott, who is the officer he's the first responding officer to the 911 call that someone's breaking into a truck yard and stealing radios. And he sees that Laquan has a knife, and he follows Laquan on foot for several blocks, staying about 10 to 15 feet behind him. And he calls for a taser.
You'll pick the story up here in a minute.
Sure.
I should have done this. October of 2014,
mm-hmm.
A young 17-year-old is walking down the middle of a street in Chicago. Cops have been following him for a while. They don't have a taser to subdue him.
Right.
There's a few squad cars, and they're just keeping a distance until a vehicle with a taser arrives. Another squad car arrives, and it includes Officer Jason Van Dyke. He gets out, and 6 seconds after exiting his vehicle, fires 16 shots in a span of 14 seconds, all of the bullets hitting and ultimately killing Laquan McDonald. The trial, almost 4 years later now, is taking place in the city. So pick it up with McGilligott.
So, as you said, McGilligott calls for a taser, and the police orchestrate what an FBI expert would later say in the trial is a perfect response. They try to corral him. They keep him away from the public. He ends up walking down Pulaski, and they have, squad cars to one side of him and then a 7-foot fence to the other. So there's really nowhere for him to go. And McGilligott at some point, does lose sight of Laquan because he starts running. But one thing he did testify to was, he had his gun drawn the entire time because he was within 10 to 15 feet of somebody with a knife. But he never fired it because he said Laquan never made any aggressive moves toward him that threatened his life or the life of his partner. Now, Laquan did stab the tire of his partner's squad while his partner was, in it. And he put about a 4-centimeter scratch on the windshield. But still, McGilligott said that didn't rise to the level of needing to shoot. So he was pretty powerful. I mean, he made clear that he did not see the shooting, and that has been sort of a fact throughout. And McGilligott is one of the few officers whose story that night hasn't been questioned by anybody.
Talk about his partner.
His partner, Gaffney, did not testify.
No, I'm sorry. Van Dyke's partner.
Van Dyke's partner.
Walsh.
Van Dyke's partner, Joseph Walsh, testified, and he testified under immunity because he's under indictment for an alleged cover-up in this case, and he'll go to trial later this year. At least that's scheduled for later this year. And he came into the courtroom, and almost from the get-go, even though he was a prosecution witness, it was clear he was not going to be helping the prosecution.
His description of the events doesn't mm-hmm. match the video. He said that Laquan was swinging a knife, and he was swinging it up high, and that he turned and gave a sinister look at them. His description of that, you pointed out in your coverage, actually took longer than it could have, than the video demonstrates. But he was making the case that this guy was menacing. It didn't match the video, though, but that's at least what he was saying.
Yeah, he definitely provided one of the most dramatic moments of the first week when the defense asked him to step off the stand and step into the well of the courtroom right in front of the jury box and demonstrate what he says happened that night. And it does not match the video. And his point is, you know, yes, you may think it doesn't match the video, but that video is captures the Kwan from behind. And
here's what we saw from a different angle.
Here's what we saw from a different angle.
So the defense wants to introduce an animated video where they'll show what it was like from the officer from Van Dyke's vantage point.
Right.
It's not the actual video. It's their description of it. Is that going to be allowed?
It is going to be allowed. It's coming in under their pathologist. They're going to have a pathologist testify as to how he thinks the bullets entered, the bullet trajectory entered the Kwan, and he's going to use that video to show them.
Why was so much time spent, a full day really, on where the bullets entered and what happened to them?
You know, it's going to come down to a legal argument. And it's sort of one of the big questions right now in the courthouse, because I keep getting text messages from attorneys or attorneys I see in the hall, and they're like, why are they wasting so much time on this? I think they're cutting a fine line in an argument as to they kind of are arguing two things. One, they had to keep firing at Jim Van Dyke had to keep firing at Laquan until he thought the threat was eliminated, and that is one of the reasons why he empties his magazine on or his gun. I didn't want to use cop speak, but he empties his gun on Laquan. But at the same time, they also can be fashioning an argument that says, and you know, follow the logic here, that the first two or three shots, they are the fatal shots to Laquan. So if that eliminates the threat, the other, 14 to 13 shots aren't aggravated battery, and they weren't intent to kill.
You can't batter somebody who's already dead?
Correct.
Really? That's a defense argument?
Well, they haven't fully fleshed that out.
But that's the direction this is going.
That could be the way it's going. It's the way a lot of defense attorneys think that it's going. And they think it's too fine of a line that's a legal argument. And that's one you put in front of a judge. It is not one that a jury is going to appreciate or like very much.
That's a nuance, right?
It's a nuance, yeah.
That may be hard to sell given how awful it looks. They showed the autopsy photos and x-rays ad nauseum.
Yeah.
As maybe they should. This was a young man's life. And so I guess that's what you have to do. But isn't this also part of the argument that if the first bullet is justified, the rest of them are as well?
That's sort of the general rule of thumb, that you can keep firing until you think the threat has been eliminated. The prosecution is going to argue that once Laquan is on the ground, that the threat is eliminated. That if he had a gun, he would still be a threat on the ground. But somebody incapacitated and on the ground with a knife is no longer a threat to somebody 10 to 15 feet away.
Have you been watching the jurors?
I have, and it's the first week, so they're not exhausted yet, and they're not rolling their eyes or giving each other sideways glances, but they were taking copious notes during the prosecution's expert witness on excessive force. And he testified repeatedly that there was no legal justification for the shooting.
Are they going to put Jason Van Dyke on the stand?
It's a good question, and it depends on who they haven't answered that question, and sort of all the armchair quarterbacks in the courthouse are sort of split. Some say you don't have to because Walsh did it for him, right? I mean, Walsh, his partner, went up on the stand and said, "From our perspective, there was a reasonable fear for our safety," and that is a legal standard, whether there's a reasonable fear. So his partner actually used the specific legal language.
What did he say? Reasonable fear for our safety
or the safety of others. And that is the very definition of a justified shooting under Illinois law.
And this is the state's case.
This is the state's
case. Or the prosecution's witness.
Yeah. So there, Walsh also did, give them a couple points in that for the prosecution that, he told Van Dyke to stay in the car, not to get out. He was surprised when Van Dyke shot. In fact,
he flinched.
And that's how you can't really see the bullets on the video, but that's how everybody knows that first bullet, because it's the moment in the video where Joseph Walsh flinches.
Well, did the prosecution ask why didn't anybody else fire their guns? If there was this imminent threat,
right.
Weren't there eight other officers there?
There were eight other officers there, five
None of them
squad
fired.
Cars and a
and
taser on the way.
There. Okay, so, and only one fired, the one that had been there for 6 seconds.
Correct.
I don't know. To me, that seems a compelling argument.
I think that, you know, the closing statements are going to be pretty important in this case, just for each side to sort of bring their legal argument, across the line. And some people think Van Dyke has to testify, right? That they keep saying it's about his perception. Well, Van Dyke needs to get up there and describe his perception.
Unless, of course, the state didn't make their case. I keep saying state. Is it the county or the state that we're talking about here?
It's the state. It's the state. The county prosecutors, and in this case, it's a special prosecutor from Kane County, Joe McMahon, but even when county prosecutors prosecute the case, it is the people of Illinois versus Jason Van Dyke.
So if they did not make the case, I mean, the presumption is innocent. If they haven't convicted him, then he doesn't have to take the stand. I mean, at least from a strategic standpoint.
From a strategic standpoint, then it is going to be a strategic decision, and it's going to be ultimately Van Dyke's decision.
Well, they should ask the jurors.
hey, excuse me, before we go on.
I know this is awkward. stay right there for just a moment.
Sure.
It's 10:51. Stacey St. Clair writes for the Chicago Tribune. You've probably been following the coverage of it. If you have, you've been reading her stories. She has a page one story again this morning about what's happened and what to, if you will, look forward to. I have a couple more questions about what this week is going to bring, and you may as well. 312-981-7200. This is WGN. Stacey St. Clair has been writing about the Jason Van Dyke trial in the Chicago Tribune. Week one has come and gone. The state's made their case. Now it's the defense's turn. By the way, it's interesting because Christine Blasey Ford wants to go second in this Kavanaugh hearing. And they said, no, that's not the way it works. Whatever this is, if it were a criminal proceeding, the person who has the presumption of innocence would go last.
Right, and the allegation would come first.
So in this case, that's what's about to happen, of course. I want to ask you about what else will the defense present, but talk to me also about that taser arriving at the last second.
Yeah, I mean, this for me is sort of the piece of evidence that I don't know how much it'll weigh in for the jury, but it's the one, as someone who's covered this case for years now, it sort of haunts me the most. And for the first time, at trial, the taser car was identified, and police had never identified. We knew there was always a taser on the way or a taser called for, but we didn't know where it was. And now we know from the video that the first shot goes off at 9:57 and 35 seconds. And then the officers with the taser arrive on the scene at 9:58 and 17 seconds. So that's 42 seconds
late. After the first shot.
After the first shot.
They did not know how close that car was?
It's hard to tell. They did respond that they were en route, and they were 4 miles away when the first call comes out. But now that I know which car is the taser car, when you watch the shooting video and if you look sort of past Laquan and down Pulaski, the car that is driving up with the flashing lights, that is the taser car. And you see the taser car coming, and you just know it's not going to get there in time. And that is, it's the most haunting image for me, because none of us would be at that courthouse if that car had arrived,
10 seconds earlier.
And maybe, the mayor's running for re-election if that, so many things are different. Gary McCarthy might still be superintendent. So it's just one of those things.
Well, it bothers me that you've got five expensive squad cars and lots of guns, and none of them has something I could buy retail. A taser.
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't be the same one, but it's amazing to me that they don't all have tasers. And to this day, since then, many more of them have.
Correct.
But I don't believe all of them have them now.
I think last I checked, I haven't checked this week, but last I checked, everyone does not have one. But one of the legacies of this shooting is that there are far more tasers, and the plan is that every patrolman should have a taser.
Stacey, we have to wrap this up.
Sure.
Will this case be wrapped up by Friday?
No. No, and even if the defense is going to be more than a week, but then the state will have a rebuttal, right? Because they didn't really present too much evidence saying, you know, debunking the idea that this was self-defense, because they have to sort a little bit. You wait for the other guy to bring it up.
When will we know if Van Dyke is going to testify?
Right before the defense rests, I would imagine
he would be the last witness they call.
I don't know if he would be the last or among the first, but he'll have to the very last minute to you know decide.
Yeah. Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you. I will.
I know you've been busy, and we've been enjoying your not only written coverage but your generosity with your time here on WGN. Thanks for coming downtown today.
Anytime.
Thank you, Doma T. Pongo. This is John Williams in the Allstate Skyline Studio downtown Chicago, looking at producer Griff. Appreciate the efforts of Joe and Doma T. A lot of you have been texting us. We appreciate that as well. Quickly, I'm just going to read a few of your texts. Earlier in the show, we were talking about how many people, whatever the economy and the markets are doing these days, a lot of people work more than one job to make ends meet. Time magazine, a couple of weeks ago, did a full edition about teachers, and the photo essay in the middle was teachers and the other jobs they have to have. John, I'm a 66-year-old male. As recently as 3 years ago, I worked a 3 to 11:30 a.m. shift at Target. That was hard labor. I do a couple of chauffeuring trips for a limo company, and then I work at my true job as a freelance television production staffer. Now I'm hanging on as a freelancer. Hey, John, taught school during the day, bagged groceries at night. John, I'm in sales and make about $72,000 a year, and on weekends, I'm a banquet bartender. And I don't do this to fund my vacation home or my new yacht or my new Corvette. I do it just to provide day-to-day expenses. Thanks, John. This one says, hey, John, my mom is 71, works in a factory over 30 years, making $35,000 a year, Monday through Friday. And then on weekends, Friday and Saturday nights, she does catering for a country club for $11 an hour, 71 years old. I told her it's time to quit one of those jobs. John, full-time, I'm a route manager, 50-plus hours a week, and I work for a bread company merchandising for another 30 hours a week. And this one says, John, I'm a 26-year-old from Central Illinois, and I'm a shop floor assembly lead full-time, making $20 an hour. And then on nights and weekends, I help local farmers with field work for $15 an hour. And on they go. John, I'm a trained chef for Amtrak. That's my main job, $29.53 an hour, including benefits. Oh, trained chief. I thought it was the chef for Amtrak. Okay, still, trained chief. About $30 an hour. And then 4 months a year, I have a side, I work 4 months a year in that job. And then I have a side hustle giving massages for $100 an hour. Have a great weekend. Thank you, Chief. We appreciate that. The Mincing Rascals was judged the best podcast in the city of Chicago by the journalists in town. They give out a Lissiger Award, and I'm really pleased with the efforts that my gang makes. On Thursdays, we post a new podcast. It's a roundtable discussion about the news. Okay, this one features Scott Stantis from the Chicago Tribune. He's the editorial cartoonist. Our Steve Bertrand and Patty Vasquez, and Eric Zorn, the columnist for the Chicago Tribune. The first voice you'll hear here is Steve Bertrand, and we are talking about the Brett Kavanaugh hearing.
I'm paralyzed by this. I really am, because I'm consistent in saying that people, when they're in high school and when they're in college, do stupid things. Those are their formative years, and they do stupid things. And so should you have been able to do this and be a Supreme Court justice 40 years later or 36 years later? I think maybe. There wasn't a crime here. There wasn't a charge, I should say. Yes. There certainly wasn't a prosecution, and I don't think that everything you've done 40 years in the past should be able to bring you down and negate what you've done since then. Now, having said that, I don't want this guy. This guy's not my guy on the Supreme Court. But if I'm going to be consistent, I have a son who's in college, and he just wrote his first quote-unquote humor article, and I hope he doesn't hear this, for the school newspaper. And he did some things that I wouldn't have done. And maybe if someone reads it 35 years, it's not the same as assaulting a woman, but I don't think he should have to answer for that in 35 years.
But if Brett Kavanaugh had been charged then, if there wasn't a culture of the girls in the other school, because now the other students are coming forward and saying, you know, there were always stories about this. We didn't. We were ashamed. We would cover it up. We would lie for each other. If he had been charged, would he have gotten into Yale? Would he have this career now?
And the truth is, Patty, that 30 years ago, that you probably wouldn't have been criminally charged for that. I mean, you wouldn't today. But I'm not sure that you would have 30, 35
perhaps,
years ago.
Right.
I mean, I think it was much more of like, okay, kids, knock it
exactly.
off. What he did when he was 17 does not necessarily disqualify him from being a Supreme Court judge, but what he's doing now at age 53 in denying it is
well, that's
what
the hook.
Well,
is
he should deny it if he didn't do it.
Right. But let me ask this question. I put it around the table. What percent do you believe her? Do you believe her 100%? Do you believe her 0%?
All right, Scott doesn't want to play
Scott,
this game.
No. I want. Let me.
And Patty thinks this trivializes it.
But
not trivializes it.
I think it's a great idea, Eric.
But
pardon me. I shouldn't interject my interpretation of this. Patty, what's your reaction to that?
What I joked about before we started was that it gamifies it in the sense that, you know, because it's sort of like, you know, what are the odds or what are the chances? And I am on the side of it going through the process of hearing the truth.
Sure.
But so I guess I believe somebody until proven wrong. So I guess I believe her.
Wait a minute.
The FBI or the investigation.
No, but Judge Kavanaugh says he didn't do it, so you can't believe both of them until proven wrong.
Shouldn't the presumption be of innocence?
You have to choose one.
Well, because you have to hear her out. I believe that she has something that she needs to have investigated. So I believe her version of what she believes, and I guess we have to believe his version of what he says.
Are you leaning one way, Patty?
I believe that this needs to be investigated.
Okay.
Objection, Your Honor.
No, that gets to be her answer.
I would like to stipulate that we don't know what we don't know and that there's a vast gulf there, the things that we don't know. But what is your inclination right now?
Okay, my heart tells me, of course, she's telling the truth. I mean, if I had to put a number on it, it would be in the 90s. I don't see what the motivation is or what the gain is for a woman all these years later to drum up what she must know are going to be hate and death threats on her and her family. Why would she do this if there weren't truth to
and
it?
Why would she name a third person who could testify against her?
You're right? On my side on this.
Yeah, I am. I would like to hear from everyone too, but if I had to choose, I would believe her. If you wanted to make something up and damn someone, why would you put a third person in the room?
Or why wouldn't your story be a little better? I mean, her story is vague in the way that a story like that is going to be vague.
Now, having said that, I don't think she has the power or should not have to demand an FBI investigation.
I don't know why you keep saying that, Steve.
Because I think that's a delaying. I think that's what becomes... I understand why she would want it for... herself.
What's the rush? Now you've got a he said, she said with corroborating evidence.
No. Let's have the investigation. Let's have it.
I mean,
I'm all for it.
When are you going to have the investigation?
Let's have it right now. We'll start tomorrow. I'm saying I don't think it's the witness's ability to demand it.
Well, and I think that becomes part of the conversation because it is their job to vet him, to do the background, and they stop. They have closed that part of it, and without this being part of the information they previously had.
This is where I'm going to jump in and say, you know, on these types of stories, even when Roy Moore's story about him, you know, going to food courts and looking for young, very, very young women, I waited days because I wanted the process to work its way out. Now, a number of other women came forward and it became obvious this was his MO. With this, I want to wait. I want there to be a process. I think it's wise. There's no hurry. We're 5 weeks out of the election. I believe that Kavanaugh is innocent because people are presumed innocent until they're proven guilty.
That's a legalism there, Scott. I mean, what do you presume?
I presume he's innocent.
Well, what's your answer to question number four about does this, if it's true, does it disqualify him?
I think it disqualifies him for this reason. We all do incredibly stupid stuff, sometimes egregiously stupid stuff. If you don't apologize, if you don't recognize it, then you don't learn from it.
And he's still lying about it. Right. I mean, I'm sorry, but which is the greater crime? The former, right? But at least we have the latter in play. As this mature adult now, he's lying about that, if he did it, to get on the Supreme Court.
Your Honor, I'd like to amend my answer. I appeal the ruling of the chair.
I recognize Mr. Bertrand.
Yeah, I agree with you. But when I said earlier, I don't think having done that should preclude him from a position 36 years later, I hold to that. But you're right. If he's called and he says it's not true and it turns out it is true, that's a gotcha, but it's a new offense, and that would be disqualifying.
And also, as Patty points out, this isn't like, it's like a job application or something like that. This is probably the most important job in America. This guy's going to be on the court for another probably 30 years, maybe 40 years, depending on how it goes.
We elected a president 2 years ago who, as an adult, said he grabbed women by the...
And
that was, he was copying to doing that as an adult.
Brett Kavanaugh is not entitled to this seat. We are, the American people are entitled to hold someone to a higher moral standard.
It's Patty Vasquez and the gang from the Mincing Rascals. Now, they also talked about what Rauner and JB are discussing. That's the governor and the challenger. And that is a graduated income tax rate in Illinois. Should we have a graduated income tax? We have a flat tax of just under 5%. I thought it was very interesting what we learned. And you'll hear part of that. The news, weather, sports, and traffic all coming up in just about 5 minutes. Let's just take a couple of them to pick up on the Mincing Rascals. So we talked about the national scene and the Kavanaugh hearing, but here is the gang from the Mincing Rascals in our weekly podcast talking a little bit about the race for governor. And as Eric Zorn says, J.B. Pritzker wants you to have a graduated income tax rate from the state of Illinois.
J.B. Pritzker, one of his major pillars of his campaign is that he wants to impose a progressive or graduated income tax the way we have in the federal government. You know, you have, if you up to a certain amount, you pay X percent, then and so on. Right now, we're at a flat 4.95%. He thinks this is a way to tax people like himself and wealthier people more and lower income earners less, and this is more fair. Anyway, this is a big part of his campaign, part of his appeal, but he won't talk about where the brackets would be and what the rates would be. He said, well, the legislature and I are going to have to work that out. And that's true, obviously. You're not going to be able to come in and you're not going to be king to say what the rates are going to be. But what I want to know and what a lot of voters want to know is, well, give us an idea. What state right now has rates that you like? Because there are, you know, Minnesota has, Wisconsin has, California, New York, all these states have it. Which is the model for you?
But if he does that, and almost everyone who then moves into a higher tax bracket is a no vote, right? I mean, that's if politically, well, you know, why would
you couple that? But couple that with the fact that this state remains in terrible fiscal shape. That, you know, and everyone's presumption is that this is going to be a tax hike. No one's going to vote for that because we're already taxed pretty high rate here in Illinois, and so
I'll vote for it if it generates more revenue because we need that, and as long as my taxes don't go up. No, but that's the point.
See, so then when he comes out with the plan, your taxes will go up.
Because you're
a
radio superstar.
Yeah, you make that sweet, sweet WGN money.
Yeah. So when you were in Minnesota, did you have any thoughts on the...
I know. We debated this a lot because one of the gubernatorial candidates said, well, we're going to tax the rich more. And the definition of rich was under $200,000. And I felt that that was unfair, that if you're making... say $150,000, just as an arguments point, do you think that that person is rich? Do you think their life is so easy that they should pay more in taxes? $150,000, couple of kids, trying to put them through college?
Yes, compared to people making $30,000 with the same situation. Those people looking at $150,000 say, right, they're rich.
Okay, but the question is fair share. What's the fair share? Do you think the people making $150,000 in Illinois should pay more in taxes?
Yeah, I do, and the thing is, when you talk about what's fair, but that also is overlaid with the idea of what is workable. How are we going to pay for what the services that we want? How are we going to pay this pension debt that we have? How are we going to handle all these fiscal obligations that we have? And we have to find some way to do it, the one that causes the least pain. And I think if you're going to tax people who make $150,000 a year, that if you ask them to pay another $100 or another $1,000 a year, that's going to cause them less pain than if you add that same kind of percentage to someone making $30,000.
I can't. I gotta say that's ridiculous. People who are wealthy enough to recognize and pay those taxes are gonna say, okay, I'm done. To hell with this place. I'm moving to Wisconsin, Indiana, New York. I'm moving someplace else, Texas.
So where's the line?
And this is where.
But no. The line here is that this state government has been irresponsible for years. Republicans, Democrats, all of them, a curse on all their homes because they don't have this budget in order.
A tax on all their homes.
And they don't.
I love that little dig by Eric on the side. No, it's a tax on all of their homes. By the way, 4.95%. That's the most you'll pay. That's what we all pay in Illinois for our state income tax, 4.95%. In Minnesota, if you're making that $150,000 that I lobbed out there, I looked it up, you pay 7.85%. And if you make $260,000 in Minnesota and you're married, filing jointly, it's almost 10%. It's 9.85. So in Minnesota, if you are rich and make $261,000 a year, you pay double the state income tax that we do here in Illinois. So should we go that direction is the debate. And it continues along with some other topics when you listen to The Mincing Rascals. Wherever you listen to finer podcasts, it's free. Just search for The Mincing Rascals. We'll pop into the newsroom. Domitee's got that coming up next. Cause girls like you go around with guys like me. Hey. Just now when I come through, I need a girl like you. Yeah, yeah, girls like you love fun and hear me do what I want. When I come through, I need a girl like you. Yeah, 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 yeah. I need a girl like you. Yeah, 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 yeah. Thank you, Domitee Pongo. It's 11:39. I'm John Williams, producer Griff. What are we listening to and why?
I think you know. It's the song Girls Like You by Maroon 5. I say I think you know because that song has been playing all summer long everywhere you go.
Yeah, I'm a big Maroon 5 fan.
You're a big Maroon 5.
I like Adam Levine. I like Maroon 5. I think they'd be great shows. Are you asking us about the Super Bowl?
Yes, Maroon 5 is now slated to perform at the Super Bowl halftime show next year.
Twitter blew up on this. Twitter got very angry.
Is that right? Yeah.
You know why Twitter got angry? Because they want somebody to be from Atlanta. And then they started listing all of the great singers and songwriters and bands from Atlanta.
Because it's going to be in Atlanta, yeah.
But, I mean, has that been a thing? Like, for several years, Justin Timberlake wasn't from Minnesota when he did the Minnesota one. And
Prince was. Yeah. Well, let's see. No, but they did a big Prince halftime.
That wasn't in Minnesota, though.
No, it wasn't.
I mean, Prince performed the halftime show. I think that was in Florida somewhere.
Yeah.
No, but I guess...
They did some sort of tribute to Prince in the Super Bowl last year that was in Minnesota.
Right.
You know, when the Rolling Stones did it, they're from England, for God's sakes.
Right. But yeah, it doesn't hold up exactly, but Atlanta does have a rich musical history, maybe richer than... Sorry to say it, I love Minnesota, but maybe a little richer than Minnesota.
Really? You think Atlanta rocks more than Minnesota does? I'm telling on you, man. We got friends up there, pal.
Prince...
Bob Dylan.
They claim Bob Dylan, but Bob Dylan left when he was like 16 and never talked about Minnesota ever.
Dorothy
again.
From The Wizard of Oz. Okay, I'm stretching now. I'm just bear with me.
And okay. there's a lot of very current musicians that are very popular and influential that are from Atlanta. I kind of see it. I get it. But it's the Super Bowl. They're always going to go for like just super broad appeal. And
well, that's just for the
Maroon
music
5
geeks.
Does
that argument, Griff, is for the music geeks. If it's, you know, who's from that town and then are they blah, 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 blah. Who's the biggest, most powerful, most broad-reaching, popular band? That's what we want. We want something everybody can watch.
Well, that's clearly what they want, yes. But wouldn't it be a little cooler, maybe, if there was some... I don't know.
Okay, so 1 to 100, the choice of Maroon 5, Griff, as the halftime show for the Super Bowl this year.
I think... look, Maroon 5 was my first concert, by the way, so... I'm not the biggest hater either, but I would go 60.
Oh, wow.
It's fine.
Wow.
This comes back around to our differences in scoring, but 60 to me means that, yeah, okay, sure.
Domitee, go.
Or he's that professor. Got it. I'd give it a 90.
Yeah. Really? Dominator. Nice. 90.
I'm a Maroon 5 fan, low key.
I didn't know that. That is very low-key.
Yeah, I didn't want to admit it when John said it earlier. I was like, I know, they're great.
Joe Brand, go.
I'll go 80. I like them, too. I just feel like the Super Bowl has run out of all their superstars. I mean, Justin's done it. Beyonce's done it twice. Bruno Mars.
Twice.
When you think about what they really want for that show, there's very few people that supply
it. Running out.
You mentioned that they should just have Bruno Mars do it every year.
Why not?
I don't really see why not.
Violetta Padromedic said to us when it was first announced, she goes, Bruno Mars is fine, but they don't dance. I mean, you a Maroon 5. They just, their presentation visually, it's a show on
wasn't
TV.
Wasn't that the U2 thing, though, because they had all the wristbands, and that was the first time that was implemented in a concert, and it was like the light show was kind of took over the lack of dancing.
There is something so super fakey about the audience that they thrust out onto the football field to wave, and it's like they're into it, but they've been come on, this
so
is way too choreographed. So on that, I give it a 7. But Maroon 5 is a halftime show. I'm an 89, 92.
I'm bumping up my score to 65.
Oh, oh, wow. I don't think that gets you out of jail, Griff. I don't think that's impressing anybody. Joe Brand, give us something to vibe on, please.
Okay, so real quick, the Red Sox just clinched the AL East Division. I think it was the third straight year. But a week ago, these people in Boston were driving down the highway, and they see a bag fall out of a truck. And they go over and look at it, and it's a banner. A 2018 Boston Red Sox AL East Champions banner, like gigantic, one that's supposed to be hung at the ballpark. So I have a clip. Here's what they went to the Globe about this, and get ready for the most thickest Boston accents you've ever heard.
We want to give it back to them because it belongs to them, and it doesn't belong to us. Yep. But in reciprocation, we would like, you know, maybe to go to a nice playoff game. Or we're looking for something. We just don't want to hand it over to them.
Right. I mean,
we need to negotiate here. We want. Yeah. We're looking for
We're working too.
Yeah.
I mean, my man had to run across three lanes, traffic.
So the best tweet of that whole exchange was somebody said this went from Field of Dreams to The Departed in about 2 seconds. Because it's all of this heartfelt story of, you know, we're big Red Sox fans, we want to give this back, but you know, we'd really like to go to a game.
Want to go to the yard and watch some.
So basically, what's your vibe score on what should the Red Sox give them a game?
Well, they have to, because there's no way they could duplicate a mass-produced banner. I mean, where would they ever get another 2018 banner?
Or the money.
Right. I mean, that thing's got to cost a few hundred dollars. Where are the Red Sox going to get that kind of coin? So our question is, so what do we...
Should the Red Sox let them go to, or should the Red Sox fund a playoff game for them?
Okay, I'll go first. Yes, only because it's sort of reverse doubled now, right? They're awful, but they're so genuinely awful. There's something adorable about their little scam. So I say yes. Griffin, go.
It's a good message to send to the kids. If you're going to be horrible.
If you're going to be bad and cheap, do it well. And these guys are unrepentant.
Don't dip your toes in that water. I would say no.
Domati?
I'm sports illiterate, so I'm giving 100 to the accent, okay? I don't care what they're talking about. I just know I need 100 over here. What do you mean? That's where I'm going.
And Joe, how do you vote on your own there, little one?
I think they should bring him to a game. I do. Maybe put him on the board for like a second just because of how much the story has blown up. As far as I know, though, they gave back the banner, but so far the Red Sox haven't given anything back.
Maybe the White Sox could send him one
because we're
not using ours. Let me ask you guys this. It's not a 1 to 100, but it's something we did on our news click this week. Bert and Ernie, gay. Yes or no? Griffin, go.
Yeah.
We needed a break this week, and this was it from the real pressing news of the day.
I don't know if they are. I could see it, and I'm supportive of that narrative. Can I say that? But I also think I'm sick of people coming in through after the fact and saying, so just make them gay. Like, don't sweep it under the rug. Just make it happen on the show. You know, don't be like, they were, but we could never say anything about it. I mean, I know that was the case at the time, but now, if the show came through and actually said something about it, I would be more supportive. It's like when J.K. Rowling, after all the Harry Potter books came out, said that Dumbledore was gay. I just put it in the book. I would much rather it was in the book.
Yeah, but isn't it interesting to note that they're gay, but we didn't talk about it. We didn't identify them as that. Isn't that what being colorblind or orientation blind is all about? Yeah, they're gay. You didn't know because guess what? Gay people are like straight people.
No. I don't think that if you're spinning that as a positive,
that's a cop out. You think
they should have
said something? There should have been a couple of winks or cues to
us. I'm not saying that there should have been, but if the show wants to have that be a part of it, then have it be a part of it.
But I think this is somewhat conflated. The writer for them said he was inspired by his own, you know,
same sex partner,
by his own partner. And so inspired by gay events, you know, is what happened. You know, I don't think those experiences are in themselves, you know, make Bert and Ernie, you know, change the nature of the character. It's just what inspired the writer, which is great.
We gave you four options when we did the news click, and the one that got most of the votes was, I don't think they're gay, but it doesn't matter. and I do think they're gay. So you had like gay, not gay, and two versions in between where it doesn't matter anyway. And most people were at least, it doesn't matter what their orientation is. They're friends. They're nice people. They were great role models. I mean, we could all land on there one way or another, right?
Yeah, I thought I was of the thought that there was no romance in Muppet Land. Then I thought about Kermit and Miss Piggy,
right?
I said,
who went total cross species, by the way.
In some ways it doesn't matter, but there is a representation conversation that you talk about. There would be, it would matter to kids who thought they might be gay to see characters that they knew so well tell them that they were gay.
And it
now, I'm not
be
saying
unlike-
that has to be Bert and Ernie, but that has been underrepresented and at the time, I think, not represented at all on TV.
Great point.
Although, isn't it true? Sesame Street is very inclusive.
It is.
Sesame Street is trying to teach us all to love and reach out, right?
Didn't they add an autistic character a few years back?
Yes, they did.
This conversation is frustrating. I'm not like leading a charge against Sesame Street. Like, they should have done this. But if we're having this conversation, then yeah, I would say that.
Yeah, okay. Well, there's that conversation this week. Guess what that wasn't about? So we spent some time on that, and that was kind of interesting to see how that played out. Let's see, who hasn't gone yet?
Me.
Gomati, what's your vibe score for us?
Went outside, got smacked with some cold air, and I loved it. Vibe on a scale of 0 to 100. How do you feel about today being the first day of fall? Are you a fall person? John Williams, go.
May I ask a question before I vote?
Yes, you can.
Can I include the fact that it's 58 degrees right now?
Yes, you may.
I do not like it. Final answer, 0.
Ouch! Joe Brand, what are you thinking?
I do enjoy fall, but I work so much in the summer, I never feel like I can actually embrace it and enjoy it. So I'm not too thrilled about it. So I'm going to go 20.
Griff, help me out!
100.
There we go.
You guys can go get your pumpkin spice lattes on the way out. Go on your merry old way.
I'm not ready to give it up.
You know what? Don't mind if I do. I don't appreciate the tone. I will. I will.
Yes.
Dome, I think I know where you are on this one.
I'm at 100 only because of the clothes. I got some fly coats that need wearing. Got some hoodies that need to see some light, baby.
Dome, he's got a mood board that's just all giant scarves.
That's our Vibe Score segment. It's not sponsored by anybody, and I think you know why. I want to come back after a quick break. Amy will say hello to us. And I also wanted to talk a little bit about two movies that I saw that I thought you are probably not on your radar, but I'm going to recommend. That's coming up. This is WGN. Griff, you may chime in on this too. Amy, I don't know if you've seen either of these movies, Spectacular Now and Tully. Spectacular Now is a movie from 2013. It stars Miles Teller. He's the young man that was the drummer in Whiplash. And is it Shailene Woodley, who is his girlfriend?
Yep.
And Kyle Chandler, Coach, from Friday Night Lights. Here's the best way to think of Spectacular Now. It's a really good movie. Imagine Ferris Bueller if he and his dad are both terrible alcoholics. That's what this movie is like. And you follow this kid's high school life, his girlfriend, his relationship with his parents. So it's a little darker. It's a little harder. It's kind of funny, but it's just really well done. I think the acting in Spectacular Now is terrific. 2013 movie. And then Tully, which came out earlier this year and stars Charlize Theron and who else is in this, Griff, that I need to know?
Ron Livingston.
From Office Space. This is a movie about a suburban mom who has a third child and struggles mightily. It's brutally realistic about what it would be like for a challenging family with three kids and the baby's always crying. This is the funny thing, though. When I'm watching that movie, you liked Ron Livingston in Office Space, and everybody likes Kyle Chandler, at least they did in, say, Friday Night Lights. You watch this movie, not only do you hate their characters, you now don't like them as people. It's like their performance is so convincing, I'm now mad at Kyle Chandler, and I don't think that's fair.
It was a bad dad double feature for you.
I know, it was, because both these guys are pretty cool guys, like them enough, and then you go, oh, these men are not living up to their obligations. I'll just leave it at that.
So you dislike them both now?
Yeah, I know. Now
isn't that funny? Because I feel like Ron Livingston is that guy that no matter what he does, you still see Office Space. He can be in any role. He can be like defusing a bomb and the superhero, and you still just hear Bob, Bob. It's not that I'm lazy. It's that I just don't care. Like, you still see that guy no matter what.
And he's done so much, too. He works a lot.
He does.
I think some people might say they see him only as Burger from Sex and the City.
Oh, nice.
Oh, that's a good point, too.
Nice. Well, in this case, he needs to make two more good movies to erase the bad feelings I have about right. his role.
But you like the movie, though, right?
I do. And I wonder, though, if actors feel that. They, you know, like when they watch the movie, do they appreciate their own performance or do they go, oh, crap.
Everyone's going to hate me.
And in fact, I hate me. I'm a terrible guy up on that screen. I don't know how they, you know, process or channel.
A lot of actors say they don't like watching themselves, and I kind of don't believe it. I'm always like, oh, okay, sure.
I don't know.
You sure picked the wrong profession, Johnny Depp.
Robert Redford said he doesn't watch any of his movies.
No, yeah. I'm being hard on it. I don't know why.
No, I think that's reasonable. Just like for the same reason why like air checking yourself is so terrible. That's, like listening back true. To your own show is awful.
It always feels good going out. Yeah. And you watch it coming back and you listen to it go, oh, Lord.
Yeah,
really?
You're like, man, that was a great show. And then you listen back, you're like,
did I say
how did
that?
How do I even get out of the door in
why
the morning?
Do I have
like
a
an
job.
Idiot.
They should fire me.
Why do they employ me here? I don't even know how to talk.
I've walked into the boss's office and said, just fire me now. Put me out of their misery.
I'm insulting people's ears.
Oh,
let me
gosh.
Out of here.
Right. If you can chime in any point now
and tell us we're wrong, right?
No. Okay. Oh, you guys are great. It's good. It's all great. Now, where are we on our commercial set, Griff? Do we need to take one more quick break?
We have one more break coming up. I just want to put in one more last word for Tully. I feel like it came and went and didn't get enough recognition. I absolutely loved it.
That's the Charlize Theron film, and I think it's terrific, too. Hard to watch, but really a good movie. So there's that. Okay, what's coming up in a minute?